question, call us at 749-B105. Let's get back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie.
Hello.
You there? I'm in, Ernie.
I'm here. It doesn't sound like me. I got a head full of cannot. It's going around. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And got a lot of ground to cover today. It's warm. It's going to be warm all week. Yep, this is pretty much a typical February here in the tri-state, isn't it, Tony?
If you think so,
yeah.
But I'm going to take it while it's here, while we have all this nice weather, why not enjoy it? But it's February, and it's incredible. 60s.
Isn't it nice?
And next week, I think I saw one of the midweek days, we're going to hit 70. It's just unheard of.
But hey,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah, just, you know.
I'm worried about it, Ernie.
Are you?
I really am.
No, don't worry, because it's been explained to us time and time again that global warming's a hoax. So we're really not experiencing the 60-degree weather in the middle of February.
You know, I don't know where I stand with all of that. I'm still in the middle, and it's like there's concrete data that says, yes, it is happening. There's data, and there's people that say, no, it isn't, but something's going on.
Walk outside.
Walk outside. Something's up, but I will not go into that arena. I'll let you do it.
It is a beautiful day. I have to say this, and I want to mention... I had a great experience, and I'm going to spend a few seconds here and thank the people at the Kenton County Courthouse, the Department of Motor Vehicles. I went down. I knew the weather was going to be gorgeous. I wanted to get my motorcycle tags updated so I can ride when I get the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went in, and the young lady behind the counter said, can I help you? And I said, yeah, I want to get my tags renewed. And she just sort of chuckled. She goes, well, you can certainly tell the weather's changed. It's been a steady stream of you guys coming in here getting your tags renewed.
Mm-hmm.
And she listens to the show, so I wanted to say good morning to her and thank. It was really nice because I was able to change a few things and get a really cool specialty tag, which I'll share with you a little later on. And she goes, it is so nice to give somebody good news. And that made me think that, you know, most people go to the DMV and are just awful to the people who are working behind the counter, mean and rude. And she was great. And she, I wanted to thank her and the young man sitting next to her with their help. And when you go to the DMV, it's not the person behind the counter's fault. Whatever issues you have, just be polite and move on.
It's because most people go out there without the proper credentials. I mean, hey, I want to transfer a car. No, I don't have the title. Yeah. No, it's my uncle's down there on the other side. You know him, right?
Yeah,
that's it. I thought you were going to tell me that you didn't have what you needed.
Oh, no. I had everything. But what was great was I realized that because. The other thing is everybody waits until the very last day.
Right.
And then wants everything to happen yesterday.
So how is that based on your birth month for motorcycles like it is your automobile?
No, specialty tags end in December.
Okay.
No, over in Kentucky.
Okay. Yeah. See, I don't know all that, but that's interesting. So when you said that, then, you know, I kind of gathered that
you
wasn't the,
you don't
the
have,
case.
You don't have some big toe specialty vanity plates? You can do it on your
car. No, just a Kentucky Colonel, but I thought I was going to ask you. You had to have the vanity plates?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Didn't Carly Simon write a song about you?
He might have. Anticipation?
You're so vain.
Oh, I was thinking of something else.
Come on. You know that. Well, yeah. I saw that when you posted a new profile pic, and you cut me out of it, and you cut Katie out of it. I knew you had an identity crisis kind of issue going on. I knew it then. I was like, okay, this says it all.
Yeah.
It summed it up for me.
Hey, we got a great show lined up for you today. We have David Kester The Boone County Extension agent is coming in. We're going to talk a little bit about fruit trees and a couple of other things.
Oh, lots of stuff. And it's the time to do it, too. So that's why you need to hang out with us all morning, because you're going to get a lot of valuable information. Mm-hmm. If you have fruit trees or if you have fruiting shrubs like blueberries and so forth, you're going to find out a lot today.
Yeah, because, you know, we have been talking about this for weeks now, how quickly these things will surface, and then we want you to be prepared. Mm-hmm. We're also going to be talking about some blooming plants, some winter seeding, the three-step program, and seed starting, because it's never too early to start thinking about your garden. Mm-mm. And, of course, your landscape, too. We had a great roundtable discussion with all of our local leaders this past week. We'll fill you in about some things we talked about there, too. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the blooming perennial, the Helleborus. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week, how things are poking up through the ground already. Mm-hmm. Crocuses are up.
Yes, they are.
Normal.
Oh, yeah.
And that led me to ask you about the some of the blooming perennials we're going to see this year. And I know this is one of your favorites.
Well, it is.
The Helleborus.
It is. And right now you should be just joyful seeing and looking into your garden, especially, you know, there's a shade garden where they like to hang out. That's the Helleborus. Also, you'll hear it called the Lenten Rose. They're in bloom right now. They're just drop dead beautiful. They're gorgeous. And what I love about this particular perennial, oddly enough, its blooms kind of nod down when it's in full bloom, almost as if when you walk through the garden or you walk alongside the pathway where they're planted, they're nodding at you. Just
a little acknowledgement.
Yeah. Like, hey, it kind of, you know, that's what's special about the Helleborus. A wonderful perennial, and really in the last, you know, 3 to 5 years has gained such popularity. It's incredible. It's hard to keep them in. They come in an array of colors. The shades of them are usually like white to maybe a greenish color, or white to a pinkish hue or a purplish hue. There are even some, there's one called Tangerine that we've had in the garden center in the past that has an orange bloom. Uh-huh. And I like orange. I don't know what it is about orange blooms, but I gravitate towards orange blooms. Mm-hmm. There's also some that almost look black. So a very unique plant in itself. And Katie was asking me the other day, she's like, you know, my Helleborus, they're looking great, yada, 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 but they look a little ratty, and, you know, some of the leaves look a little distorted, and that typically happens when you go through the winter months, and it's real simple. Just simply get your pruning shears out, always sanitize stuff, and just cut those, the foliage, some of that ugly foliage to the ground. Leave your blooms and all that stuff and the beautiful foliage intact, mm-hmm. but just the ratty stuff, just cut it out. You know, prune it out.
You know, that leads a couple of things there that I want to ask you about. First mm-hmm. of all, you said your pruners. If you don't have a set of pruners, it's a great weekend to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center. Get yourself a good set of pruners.
Absolutely.
Fresh, sharp, a little holster to carry them so that you always have them with you.
Or tie them around your neck.
Or tie them.
Yeah.
Get the little lanyard. But when you prune, how do you go about pruning these? Do you do those the same way as you do trees? You prune them inside out?
No, just it's nothing special. It's just you're just working through the plant itself. The Helleborus, the way that it grows, its structure is more clump forming, more upright. And over time, too, they'll self-sow. They'll volunteer.
Oh, great.
And it takes a couple years for the volunteer plants to start to bloom. But before long, you know how quick couple years go by.
Boy, I do.
Just had this beautiful, wonderful bed. And it's an evergreen type of perennial, especially this year. They're doing wonderful. They're loving this weather. Uh-huh. And what else is really cool about this particular perennial, and we're talking about the Helleborus, is that if you look at its leaves, they're finely toothed on the edge.
Okay.
And kind of a leathery texture, which is really unique and interesting, and I find it attractive. And like I said, the blooms are very distinctive. They had that nodding look. They kind of just hang down. They bloom for some time as well. So you'll get a lengthy amount of time out of its bloom production great plant to have in a shade garden.
And remove all the clippings, or do you let those you drop and use them as compost?
Oh, no, no. A lot of times I just discard those kind of things, okay. Just in case there's ever any disease issues, et cetera. Just always discard some of that kind of stuff. The care of the hellebores is relatively easy, tolerates a wide range of soil conditions. Will take deep, deep shade. It's just a great plant to have. Gets about a foot and a half in height. Pretty much same, similar spread, foot and a half.
Uh-huh.
Wonderful plant. Look for it at your local garden centers and nurseries. And you'll usually see them early in the season because the fact that they are in bloom. They are an early bloomer.
Right.
Usually February, March.
So what do you use for your cleaning your pruners? Is there a solution in the little bucket that you should keep or just rinse them off?
It's just real simple. And, you know, we talk about sanitizing your pruners all the time. That's just a good habit to get into. You can certainly use one of two things, rubbing alcohol, those sanitizing kind of wipes, a bucket of water with bleach. One part bleached and nine parts water.
Okay.
And just wipe your pruners off. Keep them clean. Keep them sharp.
So if you use the bleach and water, do you have to rinse them before you take them back to the plant?
Not necessarily, but you can. But just, you know, that's disinfecting those pruners and keeping them clean. And while we're on that subject, it's time to go and start thinking about pruning back some of our rose bushes because, you know, things have been progressing as a result of the warm weather that we've had. So that's why we always say this. And when Dave Kester comes in from Boone County Extension Office, we talk about fruit trees. This is so interesting. We cannot tell you when to do things by the calendar date.
Mm-hmm.
It's all based on the weather. And right now, the weather that we've been experiencing, you can see the things. We're at least 2 weeks ahead of schedule.
Right.
What we're normally expecting is not what we're seeing. At all. And I have a great deal of concerns with that. You know, you're starting to see things swell and open up. And when we get talking about some of the fruit trees, the peach trees in particular, as those buds start to swell and just ever so slightly get ready to pop, you get into one of those deep freezes, it's good night, Irene, because you're going to lose some fruit production as a result of those bloom buds freezing out. So we know, I mean, come on, it's the 18th today of February.
Yes.
A lot of times you can look out the window.
60 highs are going to be, what, 64?
And next week's incredible. But a lot of things are progressing on. The other day when I was delivering for Valentine's Day, I noticed that I did see some weeping willows that were pushing, flushing out green. We might be in for a rude awakening. On the other hand, it might just stay like this. And if it does, I will welcome it with wide open arms. Open arms. I'll hug it all day long.
Sounds like a song. Yeah, as a matter of fact, let me check your weather forecast for you quickly. I'll throw a little Al Sleet on you.
Sleet me up, brother.
Going to be gorgeous this weekend. Temperatures expected to climb up into the mid-60s. Lots of sunshine today, tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday. No rain in the forecast. Could be 68, maybe 70 on Monday, and then 66 to 68 on Tuesday. So, you know, we are always talking about being able to get out on your lawn in a couple of days. You should be able to get out there without causing any damage, and we'll talk a little bit more about that a little later on in the show. And coming up right after this, we're going to give you some timely tips of a few things that you can get started with and be ahead of the game, so to speak. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and some timely tips. These are a couple of things that Tony brought in this morning to share with you. A couple of things that can get you ahead of the game, so to speak, because Mother Nature's a little ahead of the game with beautiful weather this week. Let's start with the landscape.
Landscape beds is where we're going to head. We're just talking about the weather and how nice it's been. Well, it's expediting some things as well. You know, soil temperatures were probably not too far away. If the weather stays like it is, we're going to really start pushing that envelope where a lot of weed seeds are going to start germinating in our landscape beds.
Oh, yeah.
And that is stuff that perhaps has blown into the beds from late last year.
Uh-huh.
You know, maybe your neighbor's yard's a train wreck. You know, all that stuff finds its way into your beds.
Yes,
you know,
it does.
It's like bed bugs. They're weeds. Weeds are bed bugs in the beds, right?
Right.
But, you know, I'm going to put some emphasis on this big time, big time. And that is get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. Pick up high yields turf and ornamental weed and grass stopper. This is the product that contains Dimension, and it's going to save you a lot of backbreaking time and pulling weeds in the next couple of months. If you can get that down, this would be a great weekend to do it. We may have to do it a little sooner or later in the season, but what I'm more concerned about right now, Ernie, is, you know, the way the temperatures have been, and if we continue course, things are going to happen sooner. So I'd rather you start sooner than later, because typically we do this in March, and that's what we're having right now. We're experiencing March type of weather.
Yeah.
So I can't say this enough. High yields, turf and ornamental weed and grass stopper. It contains the product Dimension. I like it better than Preen, and don't get me wrong. Preen is a good product as well, as long as you're using one of the two. But my preference is high yields, turf, and ornamental weed and grass stopper. It is a great, great pre-emergent. You're going to get a good, solid 4 months protection of keeping weed seed from germinating in your landscape beds. Now, here's the important thing to know. It does not and it will not do anything to what's already in the beds that's growing or living. You need to use the post type of product, like a weed killer or weed spray.
Okay.
This is only a pre-emergent. And if you're on your game with the pre-emergent, you won't have these weeds in your landscape beds.
Nice.
So it's a great product. I like it, like I said, better than Preen, but Preen's a good product too. We all carry Preen in the garden centers. We all carry high yields, turf, and ornamental weed and grass stopper primarily in the garden centers. And you're only going to find this product at your local garden centers. It will save you a lot of aggravation from having to pull weeds later this spring. And get on your game, because it looks as if things are starting to speed up.
Mm-hmm. Well, since we're in the landscape beds, let me ask you, Lisa just sent me a text to ask Tony if it's okay to cut back roses and grapevines right now, since we're trying to get ahead of the game.
Yes. I would certainly start considering that seriously, because, again, think about it. Go ahead. The weather's permitting. It's allowing us to get a head start and not have to do all this at once.
Uh-huh.
So that's one of the benefits of the weather that we've been experiencing. You know, the other thing is, it might not be so good in the long run if we go into some cold snaps. Right. That's what I'm concerned about. Go ahead, prune back your rose bushes. I'm giving you the go-ahead. And if things progress and we get a cold snap and that new growth gets knocked back, they're starting to show some growth now, some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Just depends on where they're located in the landscape. You know, if it's on the south side, west side of the house, that's where the most amount of sun is. If it's up close to the house, there's heat radiating off of the brick.
Sure.
So things are starting to speed up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have to prune them back later on, you're not going to hurt anything. Go ahead and do it. If you're going to prune them back, this is another suggestion that I want to give you, is that apply the systemic drench. That's the product that will keep the rose slugs off of your rose bushes. It's a great product. It'll last all season long, and you can get that. It's a Fertilume product as well, and you can also pick that up only at your local garden centers and nurseries.
Very good. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're covering some timely tips. What's the next one, Tony?
Well, you know, if you're not one of those type of gardeners that like to cut back your ornamental grasses in the fall, which I don't. I like to leave them intact and go through the winter months. And, again, we didn't get much snowfall at all. But usually I like to look at it like it creates a little winter interest in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't get to see any of that this year. And hopefully we don't get any snow.
Right.
But take advantage of this weekend. I'm going to cut my ornamental grasses back tomorrow, which reminds me, I need to get down to our good buddies John and Jim at Bud Herbert Motors and pick up my power equipment. That is, they're probably wishing I would get down there and pick it up. I dropped it off before I went to Vegas. I'm out in Vegas. I get a message. Hey, it's ready.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not good. I need to get it out of their way. But cut back your ornamental grasses, and cut your grasses back to about 6 inches above the ground. You know, don't scalp it. A lot of people, if you have the ability to just take that match out there or lighter and let it go. You know, that might be an option. But if you're in the city or subdivision, you better check with your local authorities on fire restrictions and codes. Maybe if they're around a utility box, be careful. Don't do that because the likelihood of that box heating up and getting real hot, melting the wire inside, might cost you some money.
Sure. It's like one of those things where you always hear a call before you dig.
Oh, great.
Make sure you look around.
great topic there, too, by the way. But take advantage and cut back your ornamental grasses. I like to use, when I cut back the ornamental grasses, I'm going to elaborate a little bit on what I like to use. I like to use the old Kentucky Chrome.
Uh-huh.
Duct tape.
Yeah.
Who doesn't like duct tape? And I'll take that duct tape and go around the ornamental grass itself a couple of times. And the best tool that I have found, bar none, to cut back ornamental grasses is the blade attachment. It's like a disc that will fit on your steel weed eater, and it mows it down like nobody's business. You're in and you're out. Yep. You're not spending all day cutting that stuff and picking it up. Duct tape it, use that wheel cutter on the steel weed eater, and you'll be in like Flint.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, covering some timely tips. When we come back, we're going to give you a few more and talk a little bit about some winter seeding. We need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've been covering a lot of ground, some timely tips. We talked a little bit about the landscape beds, and Tony's given us some tips, too, about trimming some roses as well as grapevines and ornamental grasses. And now we want to talk a little bit about some of your equipment. Not your equipment, some of the lawn equipment.
Gasoline-powered equipment.
Yes.
I can't say this enough. So it's so important to just take it in, have it serviced, make sure everything's operating properly. Most importantly, with your lawnmower, that you have a sharp blade or a new blade. Just depends on the condition of the blade.
Yeah.
If it's still in decent condition and it can be sharpened, that's great. If not, it's going to cost you a couple extra dollars to have a new blade put on. But so be it. That is one of the most important tools that you can take care of if you want to have a nice-looking and healthy lawn.
Mm-hmm.
So don't put this off. It's a great weekend. You know, borrow somebody's pickup truck or a van or whatever. Put your equipment in it and take it and go have it serviced. And we can't say enough about the guys down at Bud Herbert, see John or Jim. Those guys are quick to get things in and out. Crescent Springs Hardware, and also Danny over there at Schwab's Nursery.
Yeah.
So you have three wonderful places to visit and take your power equipment to and have it serviced. If it's nothing more frustrating when you can't start something, but buy good equipment. I will say this, still is where it is.
Mm-hmm.
They're not a part of this show, but I'm telling you they should be because it's great equipment. It starts every time, and every year, the guys at Bud Herbert takes care of all the services that are necessary. You know, I have the that leaf blower. That's nice. It's a leaf vat blower.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what you're going to buy the next time you go over to pick up your equipment.
Lot of stuff I like. I told Jim, was it a month or so ago, keep an eye on a used gator. I like to have a gator around the place.
Mm-hmm.
Do a lot of walking up and back and forth.
Yeah, you got to eliminate that walking.
Yeah.
You don't need any exercise.
And, if you have a string trimmer or a weed eater that's a still, you know, seriously consider some of the attachments that will work up with it. You know, you can trim things, trees with it. Like I said, I was talking about the wheel, the metal wheel that will cut through ornamental grasses. So easily. It's incredible. It just cuts down all the amount of time that you put forth to do that and allows you to go on to another project. So think about that. Have your equipment serviced. You know, the oil changed. It's so important. And you'll be glad that you did and stuff's running properly. Don't be the guy trying to get it in at the last minute and they're backed up and your yard's is starting to grow and take off because it's happening. You're going to see this. You're going to see yards starting to turn a little color too. And while we're talking about the lawn, I certainly would not hesitate either to seriously consider putting down the first step from Fertilum's three-step program.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not kidding. You know, if things continue the way that they have been, we're going to see a quick, fast spring green up and a lot of activity. If you remembered a few years back where we had some of those mild winters, you know, it just things that snuck into the lawn or into the landscape beds. And I'm talking about primarily our winter annual weeds.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we were infested with those things. I'm talking about bittercress, henbit, all that stuff that's on the side of your house.
Yeah.
So you know what I'm talking about. That stuff sneaks in the lawn late in the season, and it'll catch you off guard.
Right.
And when you have mild winters like this, look out.
It's ready to go.
It's ready to burst out, open. It's going to take off.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the big concerns that I have as well, along with, you know, I just hope like heck we don't go into a major cold snap.
Yeah, boy. That's the thing that Lisa and I always get frustrated with. We love that great big beautiful magnolia tree in the front yard. It's those gorgeous blooms. It's so fragrant. But what happens is when we have mild winters like this, the blooms come out a little early, then we get a cold snap, and it kills them, and they just look like huge, what's the gigantic bird from back in historic days?
Pterodactyl, maybe?
Pterodactyl
is that
droppings.
Where you're going?
Yeah.
Now, when did you ever see a pterodactyl dropping? Where did you come up with that analogy?
On the History Channel.
Oh, okay.
They look like rocks now.
You're killing me. I like that when you just come up and drum up something of the sort.
Yeah, so does Lisa.
Hey, if you don't,
where
Ernie,
did that come from?
This is what I like about you. You call them the way you see them, and if you don't see them, you make it up.
You make it up. 749-B105, hit it around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're still going to get to some winter seeding and a couple of more tips, and then we'll need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've been giving you some timely tips, and we have one more for you before we move on to some winter seeding.
Yeah, a couple. I got two. I got one in particular. Just got in some pansies yesterday. Oh, my gosh. They're ripe. They're prime. And again, we're running a couple weeks ahead of schedule, the norm, just because of the weather, the way that it's been. So take advantage of this weekend. Clean out those old containers, the patio pots, your window boxes, you know, spruce up the soil. And if you want to add a really good top quality soil to your window boxes or your containers, your urns,
uh-huh.
you know, you can't look for Fertilume's Ultimate Potting Soil. And I like their motto, why wait for a miracle? That's all I need to say.
Yeah.
Huh?
Right.
The Fertilume potting soil is a great soil to use in your window boxes and your containers. I personally use it. I have great success with it, and I like to cut it with Michigan Peat's topsoil. Those two balance one another out. Now, you can use Fertilume's potting soil straight up. It's primarily, you know, it's a peat-based kind of product with very little bark, which is a good thing, especially if you're transplanting plants indoors, because fungus gnats love bark. That's where they just breed and breed and breed and play and play and play and aggravate and aggravate and aggravate you in the house. But you will not go wrong with Fertilume's potting soil. I like to cut it with Michigan Peat's topsoil, 50-50. And when you see that combination come together, you will understand what I'm trying to drive home with this mixture. It works great in window boxes. It works great in containers. And once you get things potted up and planted up, all you need to do is top dress it with Osmocote. So right now, I'm emphasizing pansies. If you want color and you're looking for color, you know, the winter's not been that bad, but you're going to get color from here on out through March, going into April and through April until it's time to plant annuals. That's why I try to get you on board with color and pansies, because they will tolerate and take the cooler temperatures. Get out to your local garden centers. Just see what's new. See what's coming in. I'm telling you, a lot of cool stuff's been arriving. All of the local garden centers here in the tri-state area. And we had a roundtable meeting the other day with our good friends from Maddox, Baton's, Burger Farms, Danny out there at your friend, Mingus Farms.
Yeah.
I mean, all of us were there. We were talking about our garden centers. Bob from Bard's Nurseries.
Jim
from Lakeview. And, Pam Simmons from Turpin Farms. We were all there just talking about the upcoming season. And it was a great meeting, by the way. But check out our garden centers, where they are the local leaders of our community. And for every dollar that you spend locally, Ernie, on average, 68 cents stays in the local economy. Don't give it to some big chain. Keep it local, and that's what's important. And talking about local, the most important thing about your local garden centers and nurseries is you're going to get sound advice. And it's just not we go to work just to go to work every day. We have a passion for what we do, and we don't all know everything, and we don't know everything about every plant, but we certainly know where to go to get that information if, in fact, that's the case. We have a passion. We have to take care of our plants. You're going to get great quality, great sound advice, and you're going to have the best success by supporting your local garden centers and nurseries.
By far.
By far.
And this is going to be a beautiful weekend to do it.
It is. And, you know, it, like I said, the pansies are coming in. Things are just rapidly just moving along, progressing. And you know something else that's really gained a lot of popularity? Not that it's a tip, but a lot of garden art. Are you into garden art? Like putting those kinetic wind spinners in the garden? Are you familiar with those?
Yeah.
Yeah. People love that stuff. I'll tell you something else we saw a lot of, and I'm sure the other garden centers do as well, are the solar like lamps or little lights on a stake.
I love those.
You know what I'm talking about? And you know what most people use those for? They take them to the cemetery, a loved one, and they can just put it right there by the gravestone, and the sun's energy is always rejuvenating and charging the batteries, and at dusk and at dark, you know, the light comes on. A lot of people take this to the cemetery. That's a great idea.
I love that.
You know, maybe you don't want to take flowers, but you can certainly take something that's going to continue and just give light. And those are popular.
I agree. One last tip? Or is that?
The last tip, yes, is going to be fruit tree pruning.
Uh-huh.
Okay, right now is the ideal opportunity, the best time to prune your fruit trees. And I'm going to leave it at that because I want to save this topic with our Ask an Expert, which is Dave Kester from the Boone County Extension Office. He's got a great deal of experience with fruit trees and things like that because, if I'm not mistaken, he worked in an orchard.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to save that topic for you around the going up upon the 8 o'clock hour, because you're going to get a lot of great information, maybe hopefully some information too that you're not aware of that you need to take into consideration when you prune your fruit trees, what it is that you need to do, the kind of shape you're looking to get. And we're pruning fruit trees for a couple of reasons. One, for stability, to help that tree be stable when it's producing fruit, to produce more fruit, and to have issues with less issues with diseases. Fruit trees are big. People are gravitating towards those. That movement is still in full force today.
Sure.
From garden to table, things that are fresh, things that are organic, it's ever so popular. So you definitely want to hang out with us all morning. A lot of great information yet to come.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Don't forget, you can stay in touch with us and pose questions, too, on our Facebook page. And when we return, we'll talk a little bit about some winter seeding. How much is too much? How much is the right amount? We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been covering a lot of ground this morning. Beautiful weather this weekend. Get out and enjoy it. Get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center florist and get ready for a wonderful spring. Tony led up to this by giving us a bunch of timely tips to stay ahead of the game. And one of the things that we brought up a couple of weeks ago, winter seeding.
Mm-hmm.
Always get this question.
Now's a great time to do it. And I certainly would do it because, you know, if we start just steamrolling forward like we have been with the weather the way that it's been, it's certainly going to expedite the germination process as that ground as the ground temperatures start to warm up.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where it accentuates the starts the seed germination process. We're not far away, but this is an ideal time to do it. And we're still going to have some of that. We still should have some of those fluctuations of the freezing and thawing element taking place that will benefit us when we winter seed dormant seed. as the seed, you know, is lying there on the soil surface, going through that freezing and thawing stage, the ground opens up, the seed drops in, and it protects it. So that's a huge benefit that we get from Mother Nature when it comes to seeding at this time of year. And I just think that, there's just so many things we can do right now.
Sure.
And this is one of them. And here's something else that's very important. Guys, I really want to put some emphasis on this. If you're winter seeding, you need to consider this. If you're using the Fertilume First Step or any type of pre-emergent on your lawn, you want to do one or the other. You want the winter seed, allow that seed to germinate, get established, mow it two or three times, and then apply your pre-emergent, or you're going to have to apply your pre-emergent and just wait till the fall to sow grass seed, or you can apply your grass seed and a pre-emergent, and this one particular pre-emergent will allow you to sow grass seed and at the same time keep crabgrass out of your lawn, and you can have the best of both worlds. You know, you can have your cake and eat it too with this process. And it's a product by Greenview that it has a chemical element in it called Siguron, or it might go under another trade name, Tupersan. What it will do is it can identify and distinguish between grass seed and crabgrass seed. So you're going to get the best of both worlds, the best of it. The thing of it is, you know, get the turf established first. That's important. If you don't have a turf, then you can't buy the products necessary to keep a nice lawn healthy and green and looking good year-round. But this works. This is a great product from Greenview. I've used it before, and it does work. It keeps crabgrass out and allows your grass seed to germinate. And another element here, too, with the Greenview product, it also has a little bit of fertilizer with it, a starter fertilizer. So it works extremely well. And the thing of it is, it's a little bit more in price, but don't let price drive you in the wrong direction. And when I say that, don't let it deter you from doing what you need to do.
Gotcha.
But you need to make a decision. If you also have a lawn company that takes care of your lawn and you want to overseed, very, very important. They're not going to call you. You need to call them and say, hey, I'm planting grass seed or I'm sowing grass seed. I need to make different arrangements. Coordinate that with your lawn care company. Mm-hmm. I can't say that enough, because you're going to go back to the place you bought the seed, or you're going to walk into the garden center and say, hey, I bought this seed elsewhere and it didn't germinate. It was bad seed. Not usually. It's not bad seed, I'm telling you.
Right.
It's because of the timing of using a pre-emergent in conjunction when you sowed seed, that all just blows up. So find out what's going on with your lawn care company.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Dick on the line from Independence and wants to know when he should put down his pre-emergent. Dick, timely question. We were just talking about that.
Okay. I must not have had the radio on yet.
No, Dick, are you talking about the lawn or your landscape beds or both?
On my lawn, you know, to keep my crabgrass from growing.
I'll tell you, I'm going to be honest with you, it's a little premature to do it, but I'm not against doing it, because who knows what lies ahead with the way that the weather has been.
Well, that was my concern, yes.
And right now, we are experiencing March weather, and that's typically when we get this product down. The only downside to doing it a little early is this, and this only, that it shortens the amount of effectiveness, you know what I'm saying? Because you're doing it a month earlier, you're losing a month on the tail end.
Okay.
So you might just keep an eye on that. And I wouldn't be hesitant to do it. I really wouldn't.
Okay.
So get out to your local garden centers, you know, and pick up the product. And it's not going to hurt anything. I think you have more to benefit from than anything else, because if things progress like they have been, we're going to see an explosion of stuff happening.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, I appreciate your help, Tony. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You have a great weekend.
All right. Bye-bye.
And Tony, our old friend Denny is on the line, the Birdman. Hi, Denny.
Morning. How y'all today?
Hey, doing well, Denny. Doing how about well. Yourself?
Oh, not too bad. Not too bad. I've enjoyed this winter weather, I guess you could say.
It's been enjoyable thus far, that's for sure.
Yeah. You were talking about the, what was it, the turf and water mineral earlier?
Yes.
Well, what I do with my turf and ornamental on my flower beds and stuff is I mix it with a little bit of malorganite.
That's a good idea.
You know, that way I can fertilize at the same time. So
I like that. That's a great idea.
But that's what I've done in the past, and it seems to work out really well and stuff. So
yeah, there's a, you know, Preem will do that also. They just have a product that's similar to Dimension, but I like Dimension better. It lasts longer, and it's better priced. But they also have a mixture with fertilizer, and what you just said is a great tip. I love it. Great, yeah. Great tip, Denny.
Well, what I do with the Preem is I use it on my gravel parking lot.
Or you could use Dimension on that, too.
Yeah, I know that, but I don't want to fertilize it, so, you know, I just use the Preem on my parking lot and stuff like that, and I use the Turf and Order Mineral on my flower beds and stuff with the Milorganite.
Yeah, well, don't put the Milorganite in one of the Turf and Order Mineral bags and just use it. It's cheaper. I'm trying to save you some money.
Yeah, I agree, but I just mix the two together and use it that way right
gotcha.
Now. So.
Well, you know what? I always say this. Do what works best for you.
It's worked for me in the past, so I'll keep it up.
And don't change it. You know another good product for gravel driveways and walkways and pathways?
Right.
Is Kilzall with extended control. You get two major elements out of this particular product, and it's a high-yield product, and I'm sure you're familiar with it.
Yeah, I've used Kilzall.
And with the extended control, Denny, you know, the Kilzall with glyphosate is going to kill what's growing and existing, but at the same time, you're getting another element, another product called prodiamine, along with it, that keeps weed seed from germinating. So it's the same product in Kilzall with extended control that's in the first step. It's got prodiamine in it in the first step of the Fertilim three-step program.
Yeah. Well, I use the Kilzall on my gravel driveway and stuff like that to kill all the weeds, and then I use the Preem to keep them from coming back.
Yeah.
So.
Great job. You're on top of your game. Always good to hear great tips like that.
Well, you were talking about trees and stuff like that, and I wanted to mention the maple trees.
Oh, syrup time, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I wanted to invite you both out next weekend to Maple Sugar Days out at Furbach.
Maple Sugar Days.
Will you do me a favor? I know your daughter, I know you don't do a lot of Facebook, but your daughter does it for you, right?
Right.
Will you send us that information via Facebook?
And plus, I sure can. I can tell her to send it to you and things like that and get it online there.
Perfect. Plus, our Facebook followers, they can also pick up on that as well.
That's right. I can put all the information on there, location and everything.
All right, Denny. Well, thank you so much. We look forward to seeing that.
All righty. Have a good day.
You do the same. Thanks,
enjoy
Denny.
The weather.
Thank you. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. Speaking of Facebook, Tony, we have a couple of Facebook questions. Our first one's from Steve Voskel.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to know if he could cut back his bushes now.
You know, I would. You know, again, you know, the way things are progressing forward, I would do it. And if you have to do it again later on for whatever reason, if you get new growth and a cold snap, just cut it back again. But, you know, what's really important here, too, if we're talking about rose bushes, let's also talk about using the systemic drench from Fertilim. When you cut back your rose bushes, use the systemic drench from Fertilim to keep all the insect issues at bay. You will have beautiful roses from this point forth throughout the season.
Beautiful.
I can't say it enough.
Yeah.
And then, you know, come back with a little fertilization, you know, after the fact, after things start pushing. I like to use Aspomus Rose Tone. Also, Fertilim makes a product that has the systemic insecticide alongside with the fertilizer for rose bushes as well. It's your choice.
Right.
But as long as you're protecting your roses and doing what you need to do in a timely fashion, you're going to have beautiful roses. And you want to talk about some beautiful roses. You look on Facebook. Last year when I was at the New York City, New York Botanical Gardens, the Peggy Rockefeller Rose Garden was so incredible. Everything, and it was in June. Everything was in bloom. The fragrance was unbelievable. I had some gorgeous drop-dead photos of roses, the blooms. And some of the photos I have on Facebook are of David Austin roses.
Mm-hmm.
We grow David Austin roses at Jackson Florist and Garden Center. And I can tell you, you want to talk about an incredible rose bush, that old-fashioned rose look, the fragrance. I'm impressed with David Austin Roses, and I've seen him in the middle of summer thriving when others have been struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And just check it out.
Will do. And while you're there, check out the pansies, too, that Tony posted pictures of. We have another question from Susan Meadows, who listens to the show every Saturday morning, loves it. She has a 20-year-old cactus that had outgrown the living space and wanted to know if you'd like to have it. I went through this with my wife, Lisa. We got a gift from another friend of ours, Bob and Tracy, a little cactus.
Mm-hmm.
And every year or every couple of years, it grew. She repotted it, kept getting bigger and bigger. And then it became the monster in the house.
Yeah.
It was tough to get outside. It was tough to bring back in. And finally, we willed it to a friend of ours who doesn't mind wrestling that big thing.
I gladly accept it. And I'm not sure. I've not really checked if she's replied or not. I was just wondering when I need to rendezvous, make the pickup.
Yes.
You know, but I was touched by that. You
do
know,
the deal.
Do the deal. Do the deal.
And I know that our friend Lena listens to us, and she's been asking us to get out to her house out in Verona or in the Walton area to take a look at her backyard.
Right.
And Lena, I just talked to Tony. We're going to make those arrangements since the weather is so nice. We're going to get out there and make sure we get that done for you.
Yeah. We also had another interesting question, too, on Facebook. It was about somebody trying to rejuvenate an older common lilac shrub.
Oh, yeah.
And a very interesting process, to say the least. And lilacs can live for a long time and just be so prolific with just gorgeous drop-dead blooms just in a wonderful fragrance. You know, when it comes to rejuvenating some of our older lilacs, it's real simple. Try to get into the shrub itself and just look at the lower portion of it as it comes out of the ground, the soil surface. And what you want to do for the next couple of years is just you want to prune out like one-third of, and no more, one-third of the oldest stems, the oldest branches coming up inside the plant. So, for example, if there's 12 stems coming up in this old common lilac, you know, you want to remove four. The next year, remove four, and then the next year remove four of the oldest. So in that process, what we're doing is we're cutting out the old and allowing this plant to rejuvenate with new growth at the base. And over a period of 2 or 3 years, you're going to have practically a brand new lilac shrub.
Really?
Yes.
Nice.
Now, the other element when it comes to pruning lilacs, prune them after they bloom in the spring. If you start getting out there now and pruning anything that blooms in the spring, you're going to lose some of that color. So anything blooming, just in general, a good rule of thumb, early spring, like forsythias and so forth,
mm-hmm.
prune those when they're finished blooming. So important. Do not prune them in the fall. Do not prune them before they bloom, or you're going to lose some of that bloom bud.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about seed starting. I want you to, again, be ahead of the game because, as we have pointed out, a couple of weeks ago, we were telling you it's quickly approaching. Now it's here, and it's time to be ready. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and beautiful weather for the next 5 to 6 days. A lot of people are going to be getting outside to try to get a few things done. One of the things we want you to do inside is be ready for some seed starting. I can remember my mom and dad doing this every spring. They had a little place down in the basement that had access light from a window. And he had a couple of sawhorses and a few boards set up, and that's where they would start all the mm-hmm. seeds that they were going to be moving over to the garden. So give us a couple of ideas here, what's best to have, when to have it, and how to work it.
Well, right now, what you should be focusing on are your cold crops. When I say that, are the type of items that do best in cooler temperatures. You know, we certainly don't want to start marigolds and all that stuff yet, nor should we be feeling compelled to start tomato plants. It's still a little early for those guys, or pepper plants. Start thinking about spinach. Start thinking about lettuce, you know, mm-hmm. things like that. Your cold crops, you know, your cabbage, your broccoli, things like that that like a cold. You know, Brussels sprouts. I love radishes. You know, those are the things you want to start thinking about. because those do better in cooler temperatures. And then when you start harvesting all that good stuff and mixing it up and making the nice homemade wonderful salads, it's all good, right, Ernie?
Yeah, yes it is.
And then start working on, you know, the other plants, your flowering plants or your herbs and things like that, the tomato plants, the peppers. You don't want to set those guys out too soon because we know what the weather can be like in our area. And, you know, I still have a great deal of concern about that. As we talk about that in between the breaks, it's kind of like one of those things, you really like it because you can get out and enjoy it, or it's really nice in the greenhouses, but also you wonder what kind of repercussions we can have when it comes to plant material. But nonetheless, it's what Mother Nature gives us, and we just deal with it as best we can. But starting seed indoors is so rewarding, Ernie, and getting out to your local garden centers and nurseries right now is where we have the best supply to offer you, because it just came in not long ago. And while you're at your local garden centers and nurseries and you're picking up your seed packets, you know, also look for your seed starting soils. You can also find seed starting soils that are organically certified, and they will come with the OMRI certification. That is OMRI. That's the Organic Material Review Institute. It's not a government entity. They truly test products, so those products are what they are touted to be.
Mm-hmm.
So you can rest assured that if it's OMRI, OMRI certified, it's definitely organic. There's a lot of people that's important to. And I could probably tell you, too, most of some of the other soils that are peat-based, they're probably pretty clean, too, because they come from the peat bogs up out of Canada, you know, and kind of virgin territory, so to speak. But you're not going to go wrong with any of those products. Also, when it comes to starting seed indoors, I want you to go out to a website. I don't have this information in front of me, unfortunately, but you can go to johnnyseeds.com, and they have a wonderful calculator on that website. And on that website, on that calculator, what you're going to do is you're going to plug in our last average frost date. For our area, that is May 15th. So when you plug in May 15th, it's going to do all these calculations, and you're going to get a nice little printout, if you print it. It's going to show you, you know, just as a good rule of thumb, when to start seed indoors for whatever it is you want to grow, and when to set it out. It's just a good guide, just something to follow. You don't have to stick to it, you know, and say that's exactly how I'm going to do it. But it's just a good guide, a good reference point. That, again, is on johnnyseeds.com. It is a seed starting calculator that tells you when to start things indoors and the set out outside, kind of gives you the date range as well. So very valuable tool. I like that. And also what comes into play that's extremely, extremely important. And if you want to expedite your seed germination process, you have to have a seed heat mat. You know, it's a heating mat that you plug in, and some of the fancier ones, you know, they come with thermostat controls and all that other good stuff, and you can get the professional growing mats. It's all up to you. But you should be able to find a seed heating mat at your local garden center or nursery. This truly, truly, I can't say it enough, you can get things up just in a couple of days because of it expedites, you know, the whole germination process by heating the soil in such a way that it's ideal temperatures for the seed to germinate.
Now, is that going to take the place if you don't have limited sunshine or something to heat that up?
Well, it expedites it, and you need the light, too.
Mm-hmm.
So you need that light. That's really important as well, because if you ever start things too early inside and you don't keep the light just above what you're growing at the right height, you will see where your seedlings get real lanky, spindly looking, and from that point forth, they're struggling. They're leaning towards the light.
Gotcha.
Come to the light. What's that? I can't think of that thing they have at the Sharonville Convention Center.
Oh, the Something victory of light.
Yeah. The victory of light. Thank you, by the way.
Yeah. But I posted that link to johnnyseed.com on our Facebook
perfect,
page.
Great. So you can jump on it's, that. It's a wonderful site, and I love that little seed calculator they have. So check it out. That's really worth having as a reference point. But starting seed indoors is so important if you really like the garden, because it allows you to grow some things you typically don't see in the garden centers. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about heirloom seeds. I have an heirloom, Brussels sprouts at the garden center from Baker Creek. They are red in color. They're reddish.
Oh.
So I'm dying to start those. So I'm anxious.
Yep.
You know, I love this time of year. And, you know, you touched on something about light. Extremely, extremely important. And you don't need to go out and spend a couple hundred dollars on these fancy UV lights and all this stuff where someone tells you, oh, it mimics the sun's ultraviolet rays. You're going to get this. You're going to get that out of it. You know, for $100, $200, you can buy an awful lot of tomatoes. Think about it. Okay? And, you know, just fluorescent bulbs, fluorescent tubes. And look for those kits where you can buy these, and you can pick these up at your local garden centers and nurseries, where it has the little pulley set where you can lower the light close to the tray and raise it as things grow.
Nice.
So you're not getting that spindly action.
Mm-hmm.
And the bulbs are easily replaceable, so you have a nice unit there. Another little tip, I like to use sandwich trays. So, and when I say that, you know, just envision a sandwich tray that you can buy, like a Rubbermaid or whatever, and it's got the little flat lid.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dispose of the lid, take that little sandwich tray, drill holes in the bottom, use those for your seed starting kind of containers, because not everything germinates at the same time, and a lot of people will use one big tray, Ernie.
Yeah.
But using small trays, it allows you to work whatever it is that's germinating and when it's ready to transplant sooner than later. So that's really important as well. And it makes it easier. And because when you drill the holes in the bottom, what I like about it is I can take that over to the sink and just fill the sink up just about to the depth of that sandwich container.
Right.
And just set it on top. It will float when it's dry, and it will just slowly submerge and waters from the bottom up. So you're getting deeper rooting action with your seedlings. And also, if you just had sown that seed, you're not watering it from the top with something and displacing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, washing it away.
So just a little tip. And use tepid, warm water. Don't use cold water. Just something a little, you know, warm to touch.
Great. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we're going to talk about some new items that are making their way into the garden center. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have been covering an awful lot of ground this morning and getting you ready for the season. And it's always great this time of year because some new things make their way into the garden center. And Tony, what's the deal about the new watering wand you were talking about a few minutes ago when we were in the break?
Yeah, it was introduced last year, and it's from a company that's been around for a long time. And the name of that company is Dram. And what's really unique about this watering wand is that you remember the old ones? Well, we all have them.
Yeah.
That you would get a little brass shut off with it and all that good stuff. And so leading up to more connections or you need more of the washers and all that good stuff. And you're holding it. It's running down your arm and all that good stuff. But Dram has one. It's got a real little easy quick action lever that you just operate with your thumb.
Oh.
You know, and it's,
yeah.
So you're not having to operate two different things, you know, on the connection.
I wind up getting soaked trying to turn that thing off and on before back in the old day, you know.
and look for your local garden centers and nurseries. Last year, we sold a lot of them, and it's just a real easy thumb lever action. And you could also, you know, that's the long watering one, and you can also get it. I think it comes in like a 24-inch and a 16-inch length. It's got the nice breaker at the end if you want to use that, which is nice. Also makes for watering your hanging baskets and things up high relatively easier.
Nice.
And then holding the hose up there and water coming all over you or getting all over you. And they also make the like nozzles, the hand nozzle pistols. that have different settings on it. And kids love those because they come in a variety of colors. Yeah. And I've said this before. I don't know if you remember. One of our customers cornered me in the greenhouse one day, and she said, you know what? How come you don't have those colored watering pistols? And I was like, well, you know, I'm used to seeing the old, like,
silver ones
and so forth. And she said, you're missing out an opportunity because I buy them every year for my kids. They each get a new watering pistol, and they all have their own color.
Nice.
And I thought, this is when you need to listen to your customer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I did, and then all of a sudden, you know what? We were reordering these things like crazy. So that was a great tip for me.
I tell you, we have six of them now. It's one of those things where I would go get them because I'd be frustrated with the one that was on the hose, and then I'll put that on later. I'll just set this aside, or I'll put this in a bucket and next time I'm out here working, and then I lose it, and I go back up and get a couple of more. Well, last fall, when Lisa and I were cleaning out the shed, getting ready for the end of the season, I found every one of them still in bags, still with the receipts. So now I have a little basket hanging on the shed door that has six watering pistols. And I always get caught, and this is just me being lazy. I know you've done this too.
Not me.
You're working, especially when I'm washing my bike. And instead of laying it down on the ground, I'll just sort of drop the hose. Inevitably, it will land on that handle.
Yeah, yeah.
And I get drenched. It's comical to watch, according to my wife, Lisa.
We all have done that.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny you say stuff like that, because in the garden center, everybody uses the watering wand or the hose ends. Everything's different. And what my biggest pet peeve are the guys that just drop the end of the hose, the male thread part, and then you can never get anything on it. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Do we have to do that? Do we have to go there? Or the watering ones are all bent at the end.
Sure.
And it's like, and you can't have anything.
It's the best and the worst is when your grandson figures out how to use it. And you are going to get soaked. And you know sooner or later he's going to get a face full of water. So it's been great. Anything else new coming into the garden center?
You know, a lot of the, like I was telling you earlier, a lot of the solar operated like little lighting
love
units.
Those.
Yeah,
love
those are still big. We say it every year. This is one of your favorites because you broke one on your forehead. The gazing balls. I still don't understand the fascination with the gazing balls, but people love those. I don't, you know, obviously.
Well, be careful when you remove them. And let me share that story quickly. This was several years ago when my mom was still alive. She loved those gazing balls. And we had remnants from when we moved from her from the old house we grew up in. One of the top of the stacks on the chimney. Remember, they used to have those old tall ceramic.
Oh yeah, yeah, stacks. The flues. Those are expensive, by the way.
So we salvaged a couple of those, and she put it out in her garden, and then put the gazing ball on top of it. And she always liked to bring it in. Well, my sister, I was afraid it was going to blow off, so she went out and ran a little bead of caulk around it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that, so I bent over to lifted off of that tile, and it wouldn't come, and it wouldn't let loose. And I'm thinking, it just must have been a little moisture must have gotten down in there. So I tugged pretty hard, and it came loose, and bam, hit me right in the forehead and shattered in about a million pieces. Right in front of my brother, my mom, and everybody else in the family, and it did cut me a little bit. But every time we go over to my sister's house, hey, Ernie, you remember when you shattered that gazing ball? Yes, I do, because you never let the story
go. Right. But that's a funny story, and that one kills me, and I would have loved to have been there to have seen that happen.
Yeah, fun times.
Oh. Only you, Ernie, only you. But you know, the gazing ball is still popular.
Yeah. My wife, Lisa, and I talk about the Ernie Brown luck. If it's going to go wrong, it's going to go wrong with me.
Yeah. And something else that's popular, too, believe it or not, are bottle trees. And when I say that, they're like they're wrought iron shaped trees with these prongs that go out in various directions.
Mm-hmm.
And what people are doing, they're taking their empty wine bottles, removing the sticker and label, and are putting them on these wine bottle trees.
Yeah, yeah.
People love that stuff. Nice. You know, anything that gives you color or accents the garden has been really, really popular.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Our friend Dave Kester has joined us, and we have got an awful lot to discuss with him. It's going to be a wealth of information for you. Got him settled in, and when we come back, we're going to get started and fill you up with info. We'll be right back.
It's time to Ask a Pro with In and Around the House on B105.
Welcome back, In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Our friend Dave Kester has joined us again, Boone County Extension agent. And every time we have him come in, we seem to run out of time. He has a wealth of information, and we've asked him to come in a little early. So we don't shortchange you. This is all for your benefit.
Oh, yeah. Good morning, David. Thanks for joining us again.
Good morning. Thank you.
Your annual pilgrimage, joining us here.
You know, I've been here some years when there's snow and on the ground and freezing, and this is a different year for sure.
What, you know, do you have a lot of concerns like myself?
I do. It's just way too early for this, and, you know, I just overall the getting things in bud at this time and swelling up with the peaches and things like that. It's just we're so far away from that frost-free date.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
you know it's going to happen. Yeah. You could almost, take out the Vegas and put some money on it.
Sure,
you know it's going to happen.
You know, that brought caught my attention when you said that, Tony, that the frost date is middle of May,
right? Yeah.
And when Dave just said that, that sort of shook me a little bit, saying we're so far away from that, and I think everybody's going to jump the gun.
Well, if you remember last year, we had a frost right there at Mother's Day.
Sure.
And it's not that I don't welcome this at all. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But it's like, whoa, put the brakes on, please. Put the brakes on. I know that last Tuesday I was delivering for Valentine's, for the floral end of our business. And I noticed that I was seeing some flushing of salix, the weeping willows. And I was like, it's just too much.
Right. And I'm sure you're getting people coming in, pushing the envelope, wanting to, things that, to buy things in now that they usually are looking for in April.
Yeah.
And it's a mix, because we're getting those kind of questions at the office that people are ready to start. And, just be careful.
Yeah, where's your stuff? Where's this? Where's that? And it's like, whoa, wait a minute.
It's
February. Absolutely. I mean, last year or 2 years ago, you came all the way from the southern end of Kenton County in a snowstorm.
Right. I did.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
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 And then a couple of years ago, there was a tornado.
I bring the good and bad.
Yeah.
Well, at least we got to bring you in on some decent weather today.
You know, really the focus of the time frame that we're in right now is obviously, hey, we got to take advantage of some of the weather, and this is an ideal time to work on some of our fruit-bearing trees, our fruit-bearing shrubs and so forth, grapevines, you name it. And typically late winter is the ideal time frame to do all of this. And when we're pruning, let's start with apple trees.
Mm-hmm.
Apple tree, we want to keep the leader. What are we doing when we prune? What's the main objective?
I like to tell people that what you're trying to do is open that tree up in the center and think of it along the lines of you're trying to capture sunlight. And so you really want sunlight to enter the center of that tree. And you've got to, we like wide angled branches. We want anything, 45 degrees or wider. That's what we're looking for.
Now, why is that?
Because those are the limbs in the future that are going to be able to carry a heavy fruit load. And that's why people automatically think that when they have a branch that goes straight up next to their leader, that that's strong. stronger. It isn't.
It's weaker.
It is weaker, and we see that, of course. You see it with the calorie pears,
right,
where they break apart. It's the same thing with your fruit trees. You want those wide-angled limbs. And so, and honestly, Tony, there's a lot of pruning videos out there. There's a lot of things online, and I find that it's so hard to talk about pruning, but it's easy to show somebody pruning. And, you know, take advantage of some of these pruning demonstrations that are going to be offered in the next
right.
month or so. And if you want to know how to do it, go to one of those.
I was, as a matter of fact, I was at one of your pruning demonstrations a few years ago down on the river bottom.
Right.
And are you still doing that?
We are. We're not necessarily down there, but
right.
we do have several throughout, actually in Cincinnati as well as northern Kentucky.
Right.
So there's opportunities out there. Just go online, go to one of the extension offices,
right.
and they'll be listed there.
You know, it's great that you do that. I remembered when I took part of that class, I was there observing what you were showing and demonstrating to us and everybody that was there, as a matter of fact. It was really interesting, and some of the things that you brought up, you know, you were talking about the crotch angles that are, you know, they're not the... They're
right.
90 degrees,
right.
or is there a rule of thumb? Is it greater than 40 or
50? 45 or
45,
so,
yeah. That those are definitely the branches that you want to keep.
Mm-hmm.
And you even had
the spreaders.
Spreaders, you know, that was interesting too, because, you know, I was never ever thinking about using anything
right.
of the sort, but you're spreading that branch and mm-hmm. getting it to grow and strengthen in that particular position.
You can manipulate those, when you put that spreader in there, you can widen those, and you, of course, put the spreader in about this time of year, and 1 year from now, you remove it, and that branch will stay exactly where you put it.
That's incredible. Yeah, I guess, does that come into play, too, when you do any type of espalier type of...
Exactly. Yeah, and you know, a lot of people are doing that, and some of these newer rootstocks that we have our fruit trees on, they're ultra dwarfing, and so people are putting them on trellises or fences
mm-hmm.
and things
mm-hmm.
like that. Some of the community gardens, even in the Cincinnati area, have got fruit trees that they're growing on a espalier or on a trellis.
Yeah, there's a couple of nurseries out west that do a lot
right.
of that, and they'll ship them just
yes,
that way.
They will.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess some people, too, that might have a small gardening area or space or a balcony, you can certainly still
have
the best of all worlds there.
And some of them will not only have that already done for you, but they'll graft four or five different apples on the same tree. And that's, you know, very effective. You can do that and have a limb that's Gala and another one that's Jonna Gold and so forth.
So there's your pollinator.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, you've got it all in the same tree.
In the same pot.
Yep.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Dave Kester in with us again today. He is a Boone County Extension agent, and we've got a lot of things to discuss with him, but we do need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Our friend Dave Kester from the Boone County Extension office has joined us this morning. We're talking a little bit about fruit trees to start with and some trimming.
Yeah, and the importance of, and this is the time to do it, as a matter of fact, and in particular, you know, right now, apples. And we were talking about, you know, the importance of when you go out to the garden center or your local nursery and you pick up a fruit tree, the early years are really critical in getting that tree off onto the right foot.
They really are. That's mm-hmm. when you're really trying to develop those branches for future fruit loads.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's critical. It's always called balance pruning. And so you want to be careful, because you want to keep enough limbs and foliage on there to be making, you know, the carbohydrates for future growth. But you also, I always feel like when you take a limb at this time and this early in the plant's life, you really don't do as much, you're not making as large a wound as you would be later on. So
mm-hmm.
I kind of look at what's this limb going to be further down the road, and is it going to be an issue? And I will probably go ahead and take it now rather than wait. But, it's balance pruning, and just really kind of looking at the tree. You know, I always say you can certainly take one limb off and keep walking around the tree, but mm-hmm. you can't put it back on.
No.
Once it comes off.
Right,
so,
right. No, I don't think so. That's not going to happen.
No matter how hard you try.
No, that's not going to happen. You know, so it's just as important for a young apple tree, fruit tree. You know, let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum here, and let's just say you move into a home that there's an older mm-hmm. apple tree that's there, or trees, and they're not really doing what they should do or capable of doing. Is there a special way to rejuvenate an older apple
tree? There is, and I get this question a lot, and it's really, it seems to be pretty prevalent in Boone County, because we have an awful lot of old orchards mm-hmm. that have been sold for development, but yet the mm-hmm. developer will keep the old trees, and of course the new homeowners come in and they've got these, and you can bring them back. It's a slow process. You can't, you know, Tony, it's like trying to make a lot of corrections in a short period of time on a tree, and you don't want to do that. You really need to take 2 or 3 years mm-hmm. and okay. prune according a little bit every year, or, you know, in this case, maybe a good bit every year, but not try to do it in 1 year, because you're really starving that tree by taking all that, you know, leaf
right.
potential out of
mm-hmm.
the tree. So you want to do it slowly, and it can be brought back. And I love to see that, because, you know, some of these old trees, we don't know maybe what the variety was, and may have a tremendous taste to it that mm-hmm. You just aren't aware
right.
of. And I like to see them preserved and kept.
Interesting. You know, and I've heard of that, you know, where people, and some people will ask me, you know, I have these old apple trees, you know, what do I need to do?
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, you hit the nail on the head. It's not an overnight process. It takes a little bit of time.
I had a couple that came, and they had a farm in Appalachia in eastern Kentucky. And on this farm, in this hollow, it was known that there was a pear tree there that every year the people from that hollow would gather when it was ripening, and they would harvest these pears and share them. And they had no idea what variety it was. It was just ancient, and pears can live 40, 60 or more years. And they wanted to preserve the pear, so mm-hmm. we took cuttings from it and grafted them, and you know, we're able to preserve it that way, because the tree eventually did succumb and die.
So cuttings and grafting is the best way to propagate or carry out
Absolutely.
Or carry on a fruit tree.
After you did you find out what kind of pear
but it is out there, and it's, you know, I get that question a lot. How do you, you know, I've got this apple tree, and the best thing to do is write down the date that tree is in full bloom, and then when the apple you think is ripening, collect it and then bring it to the office, or to you can even, I've sent apples to Stark Brothers Nursery before and asked them, you know, what's your best guess on this?
Sure.
And that's really what they're doing, is giving you, but they can eliminate a lot of things if they know when the tree was in full bloom
right.
and have the apple in hand.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Dave Kester of Boone County Extension agent in with us again this morning. And when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about fruit trees, trimming, how to identify them, and what would look great in your yard. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We'll be right back. Come back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Our friend David Kester, the Boone County Extension agent, has joined us again today. We've asked him to come in a little early because we always seem to run out of time. And we were talking about fruit trees and trimming and pruning and the production.
Yeah, before we went into the break, you really drove something home with me, and that was trying to identify some of the mm-hmm. apple trees and so forth based upon when it's in bloom, because we could have an early season bloomer, mid season, late season, and also that harvest could right. it could be early, mid, and late.
Sure.
So that narrows that down, and it also there's another element that comes into play here that's extremely, extremely important. Is it's best to have a pollinator. Tell us a little bit about that and what
sure.
that timing period.
It you know, you've got to have two varieties of apples, and they've got to be blooming at the same time and shedding pollen at the same time mm-hmm. so that can be moved around. And, you know, we do sometimes see people will say, well, you know, I've got this apple tree and it blooms, but I never get fruit. Well, it's not getting pollinated. The one thing that is in neighborhoods or in the urban areas, crab apple trees will also pollinate
right.
your fruit-bearing apple trees. So
right.
if you have a crab apple tree or a neighbor does and it's shedding or it's flowering at the same time, you're good.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And, you know, oddly enough, you don't see as many crab apple trees as you used to. Everyone's like, I don't want the fruit mess.
Right.
And I have an old Narragansett down in my backyard that I got from Dennis Raymond.
Uh-huh.
And to this day, it's still beautiful every year when it blooms.
Yeah, I think we gave up on those and too early because now, as you know, there's so many of them that are scab resistant and resistant to these diseases. And,
right.
You just can't beat that flower. And really, some of the fruit is just spectacular when it's, we've got yellow-fruited ones and red-fruited
right.
ones. And it's really not the messy old apple that we used to think of.
Usually the birds take care of most
exactly.
of that for me.
Yeah.
So I don't know why everyone has this, this
right.
Misconception of like, oh, they're messy. I've never really experienced that. So I don't see as many people buying those in the garden center like I used to.
I don't think they do.
749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Dave and Tony, we have Justin on the line from Loveland who has a question for you about moving a burning bush. How old's the bush, Dave or Justin?
It's probably 10 years.
And what kind of height are we looking at? Is it 6-7 feet? Is it less than that? And
it's been cut back a couple of times. So
yeah.
I'd say it's probably about 5 foot right now. I moved into this house 2 years ago, and he put it really close to the edge of the house.
Right.
And I want to use it as I've planted about 40 evergreens. I want to use, there's 10 of them, and I want to scatter them in between the evergreens.
Mm-hmm.
So I had somebody over today to help, and I was planning on digging them up, and a neighbor came over and suggested that I cut them back first before I dig them up and transplant them.
Most definitely, because what's going to ultimately end up happening, especially with the age of the burning bush itself, is that you're not going to get all the root structure, so therefore, you're not going to have that much down below the soil surface that's going to be able to sustain what's up top. So that definitely makes only sense that you do that, and would do that first and foremost. Have the new site, the hole there, prepared and ready to go. Personally, I'd like to do all that late summer, going into the fall. A lot less stress on the burning bush itself. But for the most part, the burning bush is a tough plant, and I don't see there being any risk of you trying to do that now because you want to do it regardless, right?
Right.
It's outgrown the space that it's in.
Right, and I thought last year I was going to do it, and that didn't happen, and now it's like, well, it's a beautiful time of the year, unusual for the weather that we're having, so I thought I was going to do it today because it'd still be dormant for a while, right?
Well, yeah, with the way the weather has been, it's hard to say because things are really pushing. Has this started to, I know the buds are there. I mean, I don't know how far along they are. And a lot of that has to do with where it's located around the home. If it's on the south side or the west side and close to the house, if it's a brick home, you're getting a lot more heat that radiates off the side and it starts pushing things a little quicker. Depending upon where it is, if it's still dormant, I don't see any problem in doing it. I prefer to do it, like I said, in the fall. But in this particular situation, it's outgrown the space. You have other plans and intentions. Definitely, you're not going to get all that root system. It's been there for 10 years. Cut it back. I'd prep the new site. Make sure that the soil's decent. It's not very fussy about specific soil situations. I also like to use Aspoma's Biotone. It's got a little mycorrhizae in it. That might aid and help promote root development a little quicker. And follow up with us and let us know.
How far should I cut it back?
I'd go into it pretty hard if I were you. I would
take my chainsaw out and cut it a foot back.
I would go down to probably about 15 inches to 20.
From the ground up?
From the ground up. I pruned mine back 2 years ago. I mean, they can take a beating. That's why I'm not apprehensive about, saying, hey, go ahead and make it happen.
Right.
They're pretty resilient. And if you lose it, you lose it. I mean, they're a dime a dozen.
Exactly.
I mean, you can go to any garden center and pick one up. But, you're on task.
Is the chainsaw okay to use, or?
Oh, no, no, don't use a chainsaw. That's when it. That's not a good clean cut. You want nice clean cuts. Get a pair of hand loppers, invest in a good pair, and that's where I would start, or a pruning saw. You can get a nice hand pruning saw. At, you know, go over to Bud Herbert's. They got a great selection of pruning saws.
He's up in Loveland, so there's got to be a garden center up there close to
Yeah, I don't know right offhand. But invest in a good pruning saw or some hand loppers.
All right, and then is now a good time of the year to put some grass seed down?
Absolutely. It's what we call dormant seeding. And again, you know, I say this often too, as long as all the planets are in alignment, it's one of the best times to sow grass seed. However, if you get into some of those lengthy, long, wet periods of where the soil stays long for a prolonged period of time, or wet, I'm sorry, a lot of times, you know, the seed's vulnerable to maybe decaying or rotting because of too much moisture. But I don't see that happening. I think we're in good shape right now. Go ahead and do it.
Perfect. Well, I'm going to enjoy the weekend doing that then.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're welcome. Have a good weekend.
You too.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And there's a couple of people, Blooms and Berries Farms out there in Loveland, Greenfield Plant Farm.
Yeah, Greenfield.
Pimpkins, Burger Farm. So he's got a couple of options here to go try to find some of those things.
And I can't say that enough. He brought up, you know, he said a chainsaw. You know, the chainsaw, the way it works, it's not a smooth cut, especially when you're cutting smaller branches. Having a good pair of hand pruners, Felco makes a great hand pruner. Loppers.
I like the loppers.
Pruning saws. Those are valuable tools to have. As if you're an avid gardener, you have to have those in your shed. That's for sure. And, you know, as we were talking about fruit trees and so forth, I want to ask you, a lot of times we will see various types of apple trees being sold in the tri-state area that maybe truly aren't the best to plant in our area or our region. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, I have seen that for you know, decades, really. And we have a wonderful publication that gives a guideline for some of the newer disease-resistant ones. Mm-hmm. And by all means, I would really suggest to people that they take a look at these, because not only are they disease-resistant, but they have excellent flavor. We now have a pristine apple. The name of it is pristine.
Mm-hmm.
Very early in the season, wonderful for cooking, and yet it's disease-resistant. And if we can grow things that are resistant to diseases, what a great step that is in producing quality fruit. And a lot of the old varieties of apples just don't have that disease resistance. So by all means, check into that.
Yeah, less spraying especially. I mean, if you're really wanting to keep things as clean as possible, the disease-resistant varieties are huge. Yeah.
You know, Tony, I love fruit, and I love talking about fruit, but I do have to tell people that this is not an easy endeavor. I mean, if you know, it sounds wonderful to go out and plant a fruit tree in the backyard, and you're going to come back and just pick fruit off of it. That doesn't happen. You know, it's a long process. It's a lot of work and a lot of spraying, and it's not for, you know, somebody who just, you know, there are things, the brambles, the smaller fruits that are a little bit less technical to grow, and I would suggest, you know, looking at those, but do your homework and realize what's involved in this.
You know, let's cover a couple of common diseases as we're talking about disease-resistant varieties.
Sure.
You know, let's talk about some of the diseases like apple scab, cedar apple rust. You know, explain what those truly are and how they come about and how we can combat those.
Well, the two you mentioned there are both fungal diseases, and they, of course, are favored by the high humidity that we have here. The leaf wetness is critical. And the one thing that I always tell people is, you know, those are two diseases that we're going to have. You're not going to get away from them, so you've got to prevent them, and that's where you come into the fungicides and things like that. Now, again, these newer apples are somewhat resistant to it. You can select for ones that are specifically resistant to those two, but it is critical to, and you know, I just taught a fruit class the other night, and we went through the fruit spray schedule, and those early sprays are the ones that are just so important. I have people who maybe live in Florida, or they go to Florida for the winter, and they'll come back in May and say, you know, I'm ready to start spraying my fruit trees. Well, you've already missed four or five sprays by May.
Right.
So you've got to get out there early, and if you can control early, then you don't have to battle them all year long. But boy, if you get infection to take place early, you're going to fight it the rest of the year.
Kind of like grapes, I take it. As the tree itself is flushing out and those buds are opening,
that's when
the infections get into the plant.
Exactly. And if you think about, as you just said, that when they're flushing out, you've got new foliage on there every day. And every day that you know, or not every day, but every several days, you better cover that with some sort of a protectant fungicide.
Right. You know, what would you recommend fungicide wise?
Oh, we have so many, but Captan and Mancozeb are both good ones, and the key thing with those is to alternate them. Don't give them a steady diet of one of them.
Got it.
Alternate them back and forth and use those. Those are two good ones. We can also use on some of the fruit, not all of it, but you can use Daconil. And Immunox is another one that can come in there.
Does that go under another trade name, Immunox?
Immunox,
Myclobutanil.
Yeah.
Good product. Yeah. And you know, I like what you just hammered on or honed in on, because these products, that's why we need garden centers and nurseries, because we carry those products.
Sure.
You're not going to find this on a shelf at some generic place.
No.
And if you're really serious about your fruit trees and so forth, that's where you're going to find it.
Right, and I don't want people to go out and buy, but it really does help if you're growing fruit to have somewhat of an arsenal of those. Mm-hmm. Don't buy more than you're going to need for a year, because a lot of these, you know, you don't want to carry them for years and years.
Right.
But buy, you know, the smaller packages, but have three or four of them available to you so you can alternate them.
Yeah, I've seen some really serious fire blade issues in the past couple of years, too. And that's another one that will plague apple trees.
That's
and
a bacterial.
Yeah.
And it really is. And you're right. And of course, it's not only on our fruit trees, but it gets a lot of our ornamental plants as well.
Right.
And it has been a serious
spreads
problem.
Like crazy. You know, tell us what that looks like, if you don't mind. And it's very difficult too. You want to discard that and expose that exposure and get rid of it and throw it in the garbage. But a lot of people, when you see that, it only gets worse, and it needs to be addressed.
Yeah, on newly emerging foliage, the shoots, the ends of the shoots, they just turn a blackened, dark, and they have a shepherd's crook appearance. They crook like that, and it's really evident. And you know, a lot of people say, well, it's just one season. But boy, I've seen fire blight go into the trunk of a tree, and it'll kill it.
Yeah, quick. You know, after a period of years, you know, it's over. And it's out with the old and in with the new, if you want to go that route. Dave, give us a little bit of information. You know, I remembered, I don't know how long you've been out at Boone County. I ran into you one day, and you're like, hey, here's my new card. I'm out of Boone County. I'm like, I thought you retired. But you're back at it, full-fledged. Tell us a little bit about where you are and how people can contact you if they need anything or any assistance or information regarding what we're talking about today.
Well, I'm at the Boone County Extension office, which is on Burlington Pike, out in Burlington, Kentucky, and just a phenomenal facility. We have meeting room space and just a great opportunity. I followed a good friend of mine, Mike Clare, who retired, and so I just had a chance to come back for a few more years, and they welcomed me back, and so I get to use a lot of the resources that office has, and we've been able to put on a lot of meetings. We had an arborist seminar the other day, and Joe Boggs from Hamilton County.
Oh, yeah,
came.
Joe, great guy. Buggy
and,
Joe.
And I'll tell you, Joe did just an incredible job talking about the Asian longhorn beetle and the emerald ash borer and the differences between the two, and it was really one of the best talks I have ever seen in my career. It was really phenomenal, and so, and actually the Asian longhorn beetle, it's a completely different,
Animal.
When you see that, when you know that you know, there's no mistaking it and, the damage that it can do.
It's incredible.
Yeah. So that was great, and we're able to host a lot of those kind of things.
That's awesome. Yeah, because with the new facility as well, right. It gives you a lot of room out
yes.
there. You know, it's funny you talk about Joe Boggs, because nobody's more enthusiastic about his work
right.
than Joe. And I was on a little field trip years ago over in Bethel County,
uh-huh.
and we were, you know, looking at the Asian longhorn beetle
right.
when it first really kind of surfaced.
Yes.
And you could look at maple trees from a distance, and yeah. it looked healthy. But
right.
once you got up on top of that maple tree, you could yeah. start seeing the holes, the niches, the
right.
frass. And when they cut that tree down, lo and behold, there's
yeah.
the larva. And it was incredible, those,
yeah.
the size of those chambers and what the Asian longhorn beetle larva was doing inside that tree.
And you know, as Joe pointed out, it's a completely different feeding pattern
mm-hmm.
between the emerald ash borer and the Asian longhorn beetle. And but the scary thing is that the Asian longhorn beetle will attack many hosts, whereas
right.
our emerald ash borer is strictly to ash.
Yeah,
so we believe that it's somewhat contained, so hopefully that'll help.
749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Dave Kester here with us, Boone County Extension agent. Before we go to the break, though, we had two Facebook questions that we're going to try to address. The first one, I think we can answer for Bill Shipley, who says that he does the Fertiloom three-step program, and he's wanting to aerate this spring, but he wants to know if he needs to do that before or after the lawn care application.
I don't think it really matters. What's really important is you have adequate moisture when you aerate.
Mm-hmm.
And you can aerate any time of the year as long as there's adequate moisture there that will allow you to core those plugs out.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to do it in October. But if his yard's not been aerated in some time, nothing's going to prohibit him from doing so. What do you
think? Absolutely. And, you know, aeration is one of those things that's kind of, I don't think a lot of people do it, but boy, the
benefits.
The benefits are just incredible. And as you said, moisture in the ground is key, but pull those plugs and get them on top of the ground. You may not like the way they look initially,
mm-hmm.
but they'll melt right back into the soil. And core aeration is critical.
And, you know, as wet as it's been, too, it might not, you know, we get to the point where we're able to do it in such a way that it's going to work like it should. With all the moisture we've had this winter, open the ground up.
Right.
You're not going to hurt anything.
You know, I work with a lot of the athletic fields, and some of those high schools will aerate 4 or 5 times a year.
Yeah.
Our other Facebook question comes from Catherine Reynolds, who posted a couple of pictures, and she said, I have these brown spots in my lawn. And it appears that they're spreading, and wants to know what you can do to get rid of the brown spots. So when we go into break, if you could take a look at those, and we'll post a response back for her.
Sure.
In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Dave Kester, Boone County Extension agent, with us. We need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have Dave Kester, our friend from the Boone County Extension office, with us. And but when we went into break, we answered Bill Shipley's question, and then we got a chance to view Catherine Reynolds' picture. What do you think those brown spots are on her lawn? Her question was, they appear to be spreading.
Okay, I looked at it as well, and I can't really tell from the picture. I wondered if there was a warm season grass that is just now it's showing some winter damage to it, or it's been hit by frost and is somewhat damaged. It's we can of course take turf grass samples and have them analyzed. It may be if it's a pathogen, a fungal type of problem, it might be a little bit premature to do that. I would really, Tony, recommend maybe a little bit of fertilization and just see how.
Yeah. And, you know, I agree with you. It's hard to tell when you look at a picture. You can kind of get some ideas. And the first thing that really crosses your mind is, like you said, is it a type of warm season grass? You know, we were saying, you know, could be a little bit of nimblewheel in there,
mm-hmm.
or maybe a little bit of Bermuda. Who knows? But you did note and say that a good way to take a sample of that is get part of the good,
mm-hmm.
what's green, along
right.
with the brown,
right.
get down into the soil deep enough to have the root structure as mm-hmm. well, and have it analyzed. And I'm like you. It's kind of tough to look for pathogens if they're really. I can't see them being active now. Mm-hmm. Not that they couldn't be by any means. But, you know, those are things that it takes a trained eye, a microscope, and you're starting really, you're looking for key identifiers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's not the easiest of tasks.
No. I sent her back a message asking her if she could bring a couple of samples to your office.
Very good.
And hopefully she can get that taken care of.
And you know what else is good, too? If you're ever experiencing issues with a lawn like that, brown patch, red thread, and things of that sort, Fertilume makes a really good product, and I'm going back to Immunox that we were mm-hmm. talking about was Myclobutanil. That is a good proactive product to use. If you're experiencing some issues, that helps keep it at bay. It's not always it stops everything totally, but you're definitely going to gain more benefit out of using it versus not using it at all. And even your watering habits in the summer months come into play with all of this as well, with high humidity and so sure. forth. So that's a really tough one. And keep the questions coming on Facebook. We do look at that. We do like that. And we'll do our best to help you along as well. And while we're in the course of talking about trees and so forth, fruit trees in particular, you know, we've concentrate a lot of our efforts here and talked a lot about the apple. Boy, let's go to the peach. I mean, nothing better than biting into a juicy peach and it just runs down your chin.
Right.
I love that.
Well, you know, I moved to Boone County and the agent there, and we have a couple of commercial peach growers, one of Jim Scott down in Bellevue, and looked at his trees, and of course they're swelling those buds a little bit, but boy, the trees just look super, and I don't think there's you just want to just wish those people the best of luck,
right.
Because I'd love to see us growing peaches in this area again. And of course, you know, the unfortunate thing is that with this weather that we've got, those buds could swell, and of course a late spring frost will come and knock off the fruit buds or the fruit flowers and kill them. And he still has to take care of those trees all season long, mm-hmm. and he gets no return from them, so
right.
hopefully yeah. we'll be in good shape.
Right now let's look at the structure and the anatomy of the peach tree itself. We need to approach it differently when we prune.
We
it
do.
Doesn't. We're not looking for the central leader. What are we looking for when we prune this particular tree?
It's an open vase type of,
right.
of thing. You really imagine a vase, and you really want that center opened up, and maybe 4 to 5 different major limbs coming off of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the peach tree is. People don't understand why they're so tender, but peaches don't go through a real long chilling requirement. When they go dormant at the end of the season, last fall and winter, they go through a very short period of cold weather, and as soon as it warms up, they're ready to jump and start growing. And that's why when we get this kind of weather, peaches are growing. Apples are still fairly dormant, and they're mm-hmm. sitting there waiting. But boy, peaches are out, and they're ready to start the blooming and everything else. And that's why we have such issues.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie and Dave and Tony. We have Wendy on the line from Amelia, since we're talking about fruit trees. And she must be channeling a little George Washington right now. She wanted to know when you can prune a cherry tree. Well, if you do, don't lie about it.
That's right. Oh, no, I won't lie about it, I promise.
So how old is the tree, and how big is it?
It's a very well-established, I want to bet it's been there every bit of 25, maybe even longer.
I'll bet it's beautiful in bloom, isn't it?
Yes. It is.
Cherries are really one of the prettiest of our fruit trees as an ornamental, as mm-hmm. well as, you know. But I would really wait on that is later in the season, really when it starts to maybe leaf out a little bit, that's when I'd prune the cherry. I like to keep those. One of the things that people don't realize is when you're pruning, it is somewhat of a dehardening exercise. So when you prune a plant, it actually kind of initiates it to start growing more, and that's the last thing that we want to do with cherries and peaches and plums right now. We want to make sure that those things stay as dormant as long as we can. So I would hold off on cherry trees and pruning.
But I mean, I took your advice. He also has two apple trees in
okay.
his yard. This is an older friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
And he's got a Red Delicious.
Okay.
And what tastes like a Jonathan or a Mac.
Uh-huh. I wouldn't hesitate to prune my apples right now. I'd use this weather. It's going to be great the next couple of days. But I would hold off on your cherry and your peaches and plums.
Okay, well, because, these poor things produce like crazy.
That's wonderful.
He won't let me put anything on them.
Uh-huh.
They're basically apple butter or applesauce.
Yeah.
Mm.
But they... I heard that.
we're at 2060 Reading Road.
Yeah, I know we are. But no, I was just curious because he's wanting to cut them all down, and they're beautiful trees.
Uh huh.
And they're not that close. They're not close to the house, and they do produce.
Right.
But of course, we all know once cherries are ripe, the birds know.
They sure do.
Yeah.
They sure do. And you know it. Really, in a tree that size, it's very difficult to net it because, you know, you might be able to net some certain limbs so that you could at least get some cherries. But the birds really, they will wait until they are just ripe, and then they will attack in vengeance and just strip that tree of any fruit.
Absolutely. But, no, I was just curious because sure. I took your advice and did... trim out some of his apple trees last
uh-huh.
year.
Okay.
But I was curious as to when and how, because it's a beautiful tree.
Sure. Well, you know, now is the time on apples, and Hal is really look at some of the online material, pruning videos from one of your state extension services, and also maybe consider attending one of the pruning demonstrations.
Yeah, because I'm in Claremont County,
okay.
and the extension office up here is right behind Sal.
Yes, and it's an excellent, those are good people up there, and I know that they will have some things available to you.
Well, I appreciate it, because I got to go up there tomorrow and do some work, and I was just, we're talking about pruning apple trees, and I keep looking at this, because I did have to take some of the lower limbs off of it last year just because they broke.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
Well,
you've
got me thinking about apple butter now, so we can't wait.
Yeah, okay, Ernie.
I'm thinking about the cherries, too.
Hey, I've got to make, 100 pints of it. That's what my kids want to give away at their wedding in November. So,
well, we're not getting married. We're already married. Just bring us some down.
I'm saying I'll be making it.
All right.
Thanks, Wendy.
Well, thank you very much.
Have a great weekend. Thank you.
You have a good weekend, too. I'm getting my butt outside.
All right. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Dave Kester with us, the Boone County Extension agent. We need to pause for a moment, and we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Dave Kester from the Boone County Extension Office with us this morning. We've been covering a lot of ground, talking a lot about trees and shrubs, plants, grasses, you name it. And that's why we asked him to come in early this morning, because it's just a treasure trove of information. We didn't want to shortcut anybody.
And still not enough time.
Yeah.
We can go on and on and on. Let's just take it up into the 10 o'clock hour if we can. But, peaches. You know, we all love peaches. And the guys from Baton's and Jim Montag, we were all talking about the peach truck the other day and how popular that is and how many people that brings in. And that's just how peaches are. They just draw us in. What are some of your favorites? And what are some of those varieties that do well in our area?
Red Haven, I think, is a real good one. There's one called Reliance, which is very, it's pretty durable because it's pretty hardy buds and things like that. And people say, well, boy, it just doesn't, it doesn't taste as well. But, if you have a tree ripened peach, it's going to be pretty good. And Madison is a very good one. I really like to go with some of the mail order companies that have their catalogs are just incredibly wealth of information. Mm-hmm. And Adams County Nursery, Cummins Nursery, they carry an awful lot of bacterial resistant ones. And some of those would be the ones that I would be looking at.
You know, what are some of the things we need to be concerned about with? You know, we were talking peach leaf curl. You know, that's kind of an ugly looking disease that it almost looks like a skin burn to me. It just really is, it's bizarre looking.
It is.
You know, what are some of the things we need to pay attention to with peach trees, and how do we go about attacking those issues or preventing those?
Well, I always say that, you know, peach trees in this part of the country, if we get 15 to 20 years out of them, we've done really well, because they just don't live that long for us. And one of the reasons is from the peach tree borers, which is an insect that will bore throughout the tree. And there's a lesser peach tree borer and a greater peach tree borer. And you really need to know the difference and also to treat them. And so those are two key issues. The peach leaf curl is one that you want to get a spray on really at this time of year. And also, of course, for all of our fruit trees, putting on a dormant oil spray right now. And this seems to be a great day or next couple of days
temperature
to get
wise,
that done. Perfect. And you want to put a dormant oil on, and it's a very safe spray. There are even organic oils that you can use if you want to, but that should be put on those trees to the point of drip. And what I mean is, you know, you're putting that oil on to smother whatever is existing on the tree. So you want to make sure that you get thorough coverage with it, and that should be done right now.
Interesting. I just, you know, it's all about timing. And I say this often, is that I can't tell you by the calendar date when to do something.
Right.
It's like what's happening now with the weather, as warm as it has been. Those are the indicators to tell us we got to get pushing forward.
Well, you know, that is so interesting, because people will say to me, well, I'm going to put it on my calendar that I'm going to spray on this day. And you can't do that. You really are doing it by the weather. And, you know, you may have to spray twice in 1 week and then be able to get away with 10 to 14 days of not spraying. So it really is. And I, you know, I've had so many people tell me that, well, they're going to put some fruit trees on their property, and I'll say, well, or grapes, and I'll say, well, you know, are you going to move there? And they'll go, well, no, I'm just going to take care of them on weekends. Well, what happens if you have to spray on a Monday?
And right.
And that's the only day you've got. So it's really
tough. It's there's some involvement with that. You know, really, something else I want to really hone in on, and I don't always have this publication with me, but it's the one from the University of Kentucky, ID-21.
Right.
The key to this particular publication is, and if you go to the back two pages, it tells you what stage that particular fruit tree is in: the apple, the pear, the peach, the cherry, the plum. And it tells you the stage, and within the publication itself, it tells you what to spray. So we're looking at that developmental stage, not the calendar date.
Right. And, you know, really interesting thing about that calendar is I would get calls from the media many years ago, and there was an individual in Kenton County named Robert Scott, and he had an orchard above Highwater Road in Kenton County, and he had the effect from the river. It overlooked the river, and he was elevated. And I would get a call from the media saying, we got down to 18 degrees last night, and I'd look at the chart, and I'd say, well, that means we're not going to have any peaches this year. Well, Mr. Scott would call me about 4 days later and say, David, I'm really sorry about your peaches, but mine are fine, because he had a microclimate there, that he had the heat off of the river, and he was able to get a peach crop many years when the rest of us didn't. And so, you know, that's a case in point that a lot of times, if you have a certain area on your property that's maybe a little warmer or, you know, a little bit holds the cold around those to keep those buds from developing for a longer period of time, you could get fruit when nobody else has it.
Yeah, it's all about the microclimate around our homes. And I say it all the time, too, that you just, great point that you brought up there. It's different for every homeowner. So what works for somebody else may not necessarily be your situation.
Exactly.
749-B105 and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Dave Kester, Boone County Extension Agency, with us again this morning. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Dave Kester from the Boone County Extension office in with us. And before we get back to that conversation, Tony, I wanted to ask Dave a couple of quick questions. We have some vine or some grapevines along the one fence there at our house, and we want to move them. Is this an okay time to do that?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a real good time. And again, you know, I don't want to plan your weekend for you, but this is a good one.
Yeah.
And you know, whenever I move a plant, to the best of my ability, I try to think along the lines, I don't want the plant to know it's been moved. So I want to take as much of the root system as I can, mm-hmm. within reason, because, right. you know, and grapes are very deeply rooted plants. And but try to go wide and get a good bit of the root system. And also get it back in the ground as quick as you can. Okay. Don't you know, if you can the same day, or even have the hole dug
right.
before you take it out and okay. get it back in.
All right, and is there anything I should do to the plant before I
do that? You could go ahead and do some pruning on it, make it easier on yourself when you dig it, so that it could be pruned back a little bit, sure.
Okay, and we do have a couple of other fruit trees there. I think there are ones up here that can it be moved now?
Yes, okay. sure. You know, we can be moving now. Most of that stuff is still, you know, dormant. Right. And I wouldn't wait much longer. I'd do it as soon as you can.
Okay.
And again, just as much soil as you can within reason and get it back in the ground.
Awesome. Okay. I know my wife was
listening. How big is your pear tree? Is it a pretty good size?
It's not bad. It's probably 6-7 feet.
Oh, okay.
You know?
That's movable. That's movable.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. And that's what I want to do, is try to relocate it. Unfortunately, it got put in the wrong place to begin with, and it doesn't get much sun where it's at. So I want to try to relocate it.
Yeah, of any of the fruit that we've talked about, full sun.
Full sun.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least 6 hours.
Yeah.
You know, let's direct our attention to a favorite amongst a lot of people, is the good old blackberry.
Yes.
Oh, well,
I didn't realize this, but the blackberry is the official fruit of the state of Kentucky.
Well, I didn't even know that.
I didn't either.
Well, you learn something every day.
I know.
There were times growing up out there in Independence about 100 years ago when I was a kid, it was a farming community, and that would be one of the things that we just loved doing, the kids, the Eubanks, the Franksmans, and us. We would go gather those blackberries up on the hills and along the creeks and stuff, and I just couldn't wait for Mom to make some blackberry jam cake or, you know, pancakes.
I love blackberry pie with a little ice cream. Now, I'm not a big ice cream person, but that's when I want ice cream. not whipped cream. Ice cream. You know, while we're talking about blackberries and so forth, and even raspberries as far as that goes, there's a couple of things that homeowners need to be aware of, and it's when and how to properly prune.
Right.
And the two different types of canes, the primo canes and florero canes. Give us a little bit of lowdown on those two particular canes and what they're all about, and maybe a tip that you might have for pruning out the old florero cane, because you'll want to do that once it produces
right,
as well.
Right. They've really made a lot of the breeding work with these things has just been phenomenal in the last 10 to 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the University of Arkansas has probably, and it's really one individual down there who's really developed some wonderful new releases. And in the case of blackberries, there's several of the Primark varieties. And Primark Traveler and Primark, there's several of them. Traveler seems to be a really new one and a very good one. And the beauty of these, Tony, is that you plant them and you get them grow. You know, you're not going to get any fruit off them the first year.
Right.
But the beauty of it is that when during this time of year, a year from now, you can come in and just cut those off at ground level. There's no with these, they bloom and fruit on current season's growth. So you don't have to worry about the primacane or the floracane. You are going to have a floracane that first year, which means you're going to have flowers on it and you're going to have fruit on it. So there's no pruning involved in it. You just cut them down to ground level and you're good.
I'm not even familiar with that. It's interesting that those are coming about. That makes it even simpler.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, you're not having to take out what produced fruit last year. Or typically, I always encourage people to tie a string around it or a ribbon so you know which one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then you're taking care of that primocane during the growing season and trying to keep it at fence height or chest height.
Right. And this is a thornless one as well.
Wow.
So, I don't know if you've ever been involved with some of those old thorny ones, but they had vicious thorns on them.
Better get their old rose gloves out.
Oh, man. Yeah.
But, and then, of course, the red raspberries, we've got some of these, the ever-bearing kinds, which are just wonderful. And you can plant those and, again, cut them completely down to the ground level in the spring of the year, and you will get fruit on them. And I don't think, red raspberries, you go to the store to buy them, and that's an expensive product.
I'm glad you said that because I always try to encourage homeowners, grow what's expensive.
Sure.
Example, asparagus. Grow things that are that you're going to reap the rewards and benefits tremendously, versus what it's going to cost you at the grocery store. So, I'm glad you said that.
Why more people don't grow asparagus? I don't know because. Very first thing we're going to be able to harvest in the vegetable garden. It's a perennial. You've got to weed it, and that can be kind of cumbersome at times, but just a wonderful, and there's just nothing better than fresh asparagus.
Oh, no, and Vicky Tuis has been kind enough in the years past to drop off fresh-cut asparagus, and there's no comparison to fresh asparagus versus what's sitting on the store shelves.
Bernie, I know her too, and I never got any fresh asparagus.
I don't recall any
Vicky, she's a great person. And also, are you familiar with the seed swap that she's initiating?
Yes, I am.
I think that's happening on April 8th, by the way.
Yeah, that's going to be in Boone County.
At Boone County, absolutely. Yep. And last year, we had the pleasure of meeting Joseph Simcox.
Okay,
Yes. He's full of energy. I don't know how that guy, where he gets his energy from, but he's all over the place.
Vicky was trying to get in touch with him. He's in Peru right now.
And I hope he brings Ariana. Yeah. She's beautiful and lovely. I like Ariana, and I love her accent.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Great way to stay connected with us is through our Facebook page. Make sure you look us up and like us. We have Dave Kester with us, Boone County Extension agent. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have Dave Kester, Boone County Extension agent, with us today. And we've been answering a lot of questions and giving a wealth of information. Got one from my friend Bootsy, who is busy underneath his dump truck trying to make a repair. But heard us talking about blackberries. And he says he has blackberries on his farm. At Trey's farm, I'm sorry, his son. And what's the best soil pH and fertilizer for them to improve production?
pH should be about 6.5, which is, what we say for just about everything except blueberries. And but one of the things that I would recommend to them is get a soil sample and bring it into your extension office. And if you're in Kentucky, it's it's not going to be much. But if you're not in Kentucky, it's just such a valuable source and a way to start the growing season. Have a soil sample done, and we can tell you exactly what fertility that plant's going to need and where your pH stands and everything else. So, but just a general fertilizer, Tony, I think 10-10-10 or something like that would be fine on those.
Okay, great.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I put a lot of emphasis on soil samples, and I don't know, is the state of Kentucky, are you guys charging now for that, or are you not, or is it still somewhat of a free service for those who live in the county?
There are counties that still do charge. We don't in Boone, right. Kent, or Campbell. It's but it just depends on it's still a very it's not a big fee in Ohio, and it's certainly not in Kentucky either. So I would just take advantage
of
it.
Let's talk about getting that sample together. You know, the more random the sample is, yes. Don't just do it from one spot.
No, if it's your yard, you want to go to four or five different places and take a and we want soil. We don't want the dead grass or leaves or things like that. We want honest to goodness soil to a depth of 4 inches, 5 inches, and you just take a core out and you mix all four or five of those
together
in a plastic bag, and make sure it's not a fertilizer bag, and you air dry that and then bring it into your extension office.
Yeah, that's so important, and I say this all the time. This is what I liken it to. If you have high blood pressure and your physician does not take your blood pressure or monitor the blood pressure, how does he or she know what they need to prescribe you to get that in control? I think it's kind of a very similar kind of comparison.
Sure.
You know, knowing what your soil is comprised of, it gives you that foundation to build upon.
Right, and you don't have to do it every year, but I think every 3 years or so, just and then if you've got a problem area, if there's an area of your, you know, your landscape or your yard that's not doing well, sample that separately so that we can, you know, maybe determine if there's some sort of an issue in there.
Right. When do you cringe? What is it that you hear people say often, and I cringe when I hear this? They always want to sweeten the soil with lime. And I'm like, really? Well, that's what my grandpa used to do. That's what Joe, three doors down, said to me to do. You know, time out.
Yeah.
You know, if Joe jumps off that bridge, are you going with him? Or, you know, let's drop back and punt and look at this.
Especially in northern Kentucky, we have basic soils. We have sweet soils. And by adding lime to them indiscriminately, you could really be taking that whole pH range out of whack and really make a lot of nutrients unavailable to plants.
Right.
So do not ever, and the same goes for wood ashes. I know a lot of people
know all about that.
Heat with you know, wood, and you'll just take your wood ashes because they've got potassium in them. But no, don't do that. Wood ashes are extremely basic as well. They will sweeten the soil, and we don't want that. We really want our soils to be slightly acidic, and I'd rather be at the 6.2 range than at the 7.2 range. I want it a little bit of acidic.
I've seen some test results come back that are high off the charts. You know, they're upper sevens. And you hone in on something one more time for me. You said you keyed in on when a plant is in its ideal pH range, what's the importance of that? Because you said the amount of nutrients that are there, you can fertilize it all you want, it still will not take up what's available.
Well, you know, there's all the nutrients that are required by plants. And if you look on the pH chart and you go to 6.5 and you draw a line straight down, you will find that they are most available to that plant at a pH at 6.5. So that's where you really want that pH to be. And if you go really acidic the other way to the acid side, they become unavailable. If you go really basic up towards 8.0, they become unavailable. They are most available, all those plant requiring nutrients, right at 6.5.
Great. That's good information to have.
749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and Dave Kester, Boone County Extension Office agent, has been here with us today. Unbelievable information again. And before we go, can you give us your contact info?
Sure. Phone number is 586-6101, and of course that's area code 859 in Kentucky.
Thank you so much again for coming
in. Thank you.
You're coming in always a pleasure, and you're more than welcome. And anytime you want to give us a call from the office, if you're still willing to get up early on Saturday mornings at home.
If I call in, I don't see Ernie, so I'm coming in.
All right, you guys have a great weekend. We'll be back to talk to you next week.